Hey, everybody, it's Adam Ray.
Hey, it's Brad Williams this time.
Thanks for coming to do an intro.
Darn right.
This is the best. Welcome to a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast. Thanks for listening. Happy Monday. Hope you had a great weekend. I know I did. I watched Ken Griffey Jr. have his jersey retired.
That's then for people that aren't in Seattle, that's like the biggest day in Seattle's history, right?
It's a huge day. Ricky Henderson was there. Gary Payton was there. Willie Mays and Hank Aaron sent video tribute messages.
No kidding.
Did I cry? Yeah. Was my mom and dad there with me? Yeah.
Wow.
That was a big deal.
Together?
Yeah, they've been around each other before, but in a social setting like that, like going together, like it was pretty dope. And then two of my buddies from high school, Adam French and Chris DeLeon, came with.
Dude,
it was amazing.
That's like your dream.
Yeah.
Griffey celebration, parents together,
with the folks, yeah.
Friends there.
My buddy goes, what if your dad gets drunk and proposes again? I was like, hey, he's not drinking.
Hey, Putin, look up on the big board.
Oh, my God. They did have those mid-game proposals, which are always so terrible,
always
in my opinion.
Fuck.
But the game was incredible. Great to be home with the fam.
Yeah, man.
And now we got a brand new ep. We've got quite a few shows stacked coming up.
Yeah.
Because now you're in town for a little bit.
I'm in town, and then you got a little bit of time with Mad, although it's tough to fit these in, but we're
doing it.
We got to do it.
Hey, we might be a little more tired than normal.
Don't care.
But we're going to power through. That's what coffee's for. That's what crack's for.
I mean,
that's what coffee's for.
Coffee. Okay. Yeah, don't tell them about the crack.
I realize sometimes when I say things like that, I know that it's a joke, but
right,
like, there's always, depending on how much time you spend on that joke or how quickly you move from it, there could be somebody that's like, I think he does crack. The way he said that did not sound very jokey.
Great. Now people are going to come up to us after the show. Hey, we got what you like.
Yeah.
You're like, wait, fuck. What?
Pop-Tarts?
Pop-Tarts?
That's, if that's what we're calling it.
DuckTales on DVD? I mean, that's the weirdest name for crack I've ever heard, but yeah. All right, sure.
It's long. Today's episode is a fun one because it's somebody who really made a nice splash in the comedy scene. He's been around. Today's episode is someone you may or may not know. He's very well known in the comedy community.
Hell yeah.
A Comedy Store regular, a comics comic, someone who's been grinding in the business for
14 years. 14 years, and finally getting a little bit of fame with his appearance on the Roast Battle.
Yeah, he is a staple of the critically acclaimed Roast Battle show that just had a nice little run on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
My boy Brian Moses, Jeff Ross producing. Crushed it on Comedy Central. Really got to see what we've all been seeing for years now in the belly room at the Comedy Store here in L.A. And Earl is a integral part of that show in the belly room, and now he got to be a part of the battle, battling Jimmy Carr.
Beating Jimmy Carr.
Beating Jimmy Carr.
That's
was in the finals against Sarah Tiana.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it yet, I'm sure it's all on cc.com.
Yep.
Go back and watch.
Comedy Central app, do that.
He's a great dude offstage. He's a great dude off stage. He's a great dude on stage. We're talking about the one and only Earl Skakel.
Earl Skakel. And yeah. I tell you, man, Earl's been a friend of both of ours, but we did some research on the guy, found out some amazing things, which you're going to hear in this podcast in terms of who his family is, the sort of the family connection to the Kennedy family.
Yeah, where he grew up.
It's really some amazing stuff. Him and I kind of bonded about pro wrestling while your eyes rolled in the back of your head.
Yeah.
But those were always fun moments for me.
And Earl also shared like a really sweet insight into how the battle came to be, his involvement with it.
Yep.
And then, you know, some really, you know, him talking about not being a traditional joke writer or roast writer.
Yeah.
And so having to find other ways to really make his mark. And then we just talk about roasting in general and the Comedy Store in L.A. And Earl shares some sweet advice for young comics, as well as a story about taking Viagra that is fucking unbelievable.
You got to hear this. Follow Earl on Twitter and also listen to his podcast. He's Earl Skakel on Twitter. EARLSKAKEL. Earl Skakel on Twitter. Listen to his podcast. And
what's his podcast called? Inappropriate Earl.
There it is.
I listen to it. I love it. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. At ALN Podcast for the podcast. At ALN Podcast on Instagram. Brad Williams Comic on Instagram. Adam Ray 33 on Instagram. AstoriaMerchandise.com for all your ALN merch. Mugs, hat shirts, posters.
All
stickers. Stickers coming soon.
Oh,
I'm getting a stickers.
Sweet.
The ET stickers.
Oh, nice.
We need them.
I'm putting it on my car.
Yes. Cars, backpacks.
Hell yeah.
Butts. Put them anywhere.
Sure. Sneak it on your roommate having sex. Slap it on his butt.
Yeah. Promote the podcast. If you haven't gotten to iTunes yet and subscribe, do it right now. Give us a 5-star rating. Click on that 5th star. Comment on the iTunes page. Helps us climb the charts and continue to bring you guys dope shows. So many great episodes in the can. Mad TV cast members are coming through shortly, which, by the way, new episode tomorrow night, 9 p.m. 8 central on the CW. Check it out. The clips are coming online shortly after, so share those. Shoot me some tweets. Let me know how you're digging the show. Appreciate you watching. Now, Brad Williams, tour dates. You're traveling.
Yeah.
Where are you going
to
be?
Buffalo, New York. I'm coming to eat some wings and do some comedy. Helium Comedy Club, August 11th through the 13th at Helium Comedy in Buffalo. And then Tampa Bay. I'm coming to you August 18th through the 21st. I will be at the Improv in Tampa Bay. For all other tour dates, I'm booked way into 2017. BradWilliamsComedy.com. See when I'm coming to you. Say hi. Love it when you tell me that you're a podcast listener.
That is really the best.
It is freaking
fans
awesome.
In general are great, but when you come up and you're like, I love this app, I love this app, I love the pod, here's my shirt, time my tits, we're like, we love all of that.
Yeah.
Because it makes it more real. Seeing a face-to-face fan is always the best. Come see me. I'm in town up until September 2nd, September 3rd and 4th. I'll be at Bumbershoot in Seattle, Washington, doing shows. I'll post those shows on my website, adamraytv.com, which has all my tour dates, filling up the fall schedule, coming to Erie, Pennsylvania, Rochester, New York, Tempe Improv, Las Vegas. Some more dates on the way, so check AdamRayTV.com for all those dates. Now that we got the dates out of the way, those are the Twitter handles, those are the tour dates, that's all the merch info, that's the Mad TV info, and now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only
Earl Skakel.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and a dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
You're no headphone guy.
Yeah, dude. I mean, look at the size of my head. Stretch out.
Yeah, you and I both, man. Like, yeah. I don't know if you had this happen. I had this happen all the time when I was a kid. Like, I would break headphones. Like, yeah. I would want to listen to kids' CD players. Or like, oh, I got the new Crisscross album. Well, why did I say Crisscross? Whatever. And I was like, yeah, I want to listen to that. And then I would put on their headphones and just snap them.
I mean, I couldn't wear hockey helmets when I played because I had to take the padding out.
No shit?
Yeah. I have a huge head. Huge.
Have you always had a big head?
Yeah. I mean, my mom's pussy was stretched out.
Yeah, except that wasn't what I was asking.
Are we on right now?
Yeah,
oh,
man.
So we're just getting into it.
Yeah, we have a whole section of the podcast where we talk about your mom's pussy. So.
Well, it was sizable.
I mean, not just the guests, like specifically your mom's pussy. Every episode.
Okay, whatever. I mean, you know, whatever gets me airtime.
Have you ever gotten to a point to where, I remember being in the 6th grade, and when I first started to receive, like, your mom is so fat jokes from older statesmen, you know, like, kids are like they were 8th graders when I was in 6th grade, but we'd be all playing basketball on the same court in the summertime, and when they threw a your mom is so fat joke, I actually got upset about it, even though these guys never even seen my mom.
I mean, I didn't get too upset because I realized I had more money than anyone in my school. So,
well, I mean, that helps.
Always,
I guess.
Huh?
Suck it.
Is this that Kennedy connection?
No, the Skakels have way more money than the Kennedys. So.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
this is a known fact. Story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my dad's company was the largest privately owned company in the world for a long time until like the internet freakers came in. And
no shit.
But he went deep. He lost a lot of his money. It was an oil graphite company.
Yeah,
because like when I was doing some research for this interview. Yeah, I do my research. What's up? I saw all these, like, when you type in Skakel, it's like all this, like, Kennedy connection, yeah. And, like, how are you guys connected to the Kennedys?
My aunt is Ethel Kennedy.
Who is the...
Who married Robert Kennedy, the second brother who got killed.
Oh, no shit. That's your aunt.
So it's just my marriage. So it's okay. Not that big of a deal to me. But last week, every person I roasted was, hey, you're Kennedy, you're this, you're that.
Right, right, right.
It's a target.
Well, I mean, you're a difficult person to roast because you're just a tall, good-looking white guy.
But with no success, so it's like you can't joke.
Yeah, but how long can you, also everyone measures success differently, and how many jokes of those can you take before you're like, all right, dude, like, what, like.
I mean, I know it's coming.
Yeah.
So like you, if you do roast battle, people would probably joke about, say, Mad TV.
Yeah.
And other shows you've been on, same your Netflix special.
Yeah.
Well, this
Showtime, but whatever. Right. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Well, there you go. There's the joke.
I was trying to palm on the DL. I'm doing the wrong plugs.
Yeah. But so people go off after always stuff that's
right,
like
stuff that you. Yeah. Well, you've been on a ton of shows.
Yeah. And, I mean,
Showtime special.
Yeah. I would imagine they would probably go after like. If I was roasting me, because I was Mencia's opener for 4 years, so
that would be a pull.
Yeah, there's probably some stuff there.
Get that, sure. And, physically they can go after you, like with me.
Wait, well, what are you talking about?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Well, if you saw the Ralphie May, roast last week, it got ugly fast.
It did.
Wait, but like people go after me physically? Do I have anything weird physically about me?
Brad, I hate to break this to you, but.
What?
George Perez went after me. And he put you into the joke. He
really?
Said,
what?
Earl looks like a stretched out Brad Williams.
Wow.
I mean, we do both have large foreheads. Now that I'm looking at it,
that's
like,
compliment.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I mean, that just means you and I are two very extremely good looking men.
I think we are. I mean,
Yeah, do all right.
How do you even
both played hockey? That's manly sport.
Oh, that's right.
So you can't get any more manly than hockey.
You really can't.
We're both pro wrestling fans.
Well, that's the real deal. There.
I mean, you're pretty much my tall doppelganger.
Yeah, I mean, we are like, maybe you came out of my mom's pussy. That's why. That's how big it is. We both came out at the same time.
Next time on the WB's brand new sitcom, maybe you came out of my mom's pussy.
Yeah,
there's my mom's pussy.
Yeah,
there's worse on the air.
On this week's My Mom's Pussy. Janine,
I'm telling you, there's the guy from Man vs. Food was up at the Comedy Store. You know, the guy who just eats like 8 pound burgers.
Yeah, I love that show.
And I said, hey, dude, I got an idea for a show. If you don't, and I was joking around. He's like, what is it, man? I'm like, you have a competitive eating show called Man vs. Toilet. And it airs right after Man vs. Food. And he didn't say no. He was like, well, what's the premise? Like,
wow.
And so I told him the premise. You have 12 porta potties lined up with a scale at the bottom, and whoever shits the least gets kicked off the show. And he's like, wow. And then he just walked
away. There's always a lot of the Comedy Store might be one of the most frequented places by celebrities that you just don't expect to see out. I saw Brian McKnight there once, and I told him I loved the song Back at One, and he goes, everybody does, man, and walked away. And I go, well, that was not the encounter I was hoping to have. Also, maybe next time just don't go up to him. Like, you forget that they're there just to hang out and see comedy, unless they're coming with you and you already have, a built-in friendship.
But it's hard to not go up to them. Like,
right, they're on your turf.
It's like, I saw Matthew Modine, and he's with Kirk Fox, and I just walked. I didn't hesitate for 2 seconds and walked right up to him and said, loved you in Private School, which is like his first movie ever.
Yeah. How often does he hear that every day?
It's like Tom Cruise will stop an interview if you bring up Losing It, that movie he did.
Oh, wow.
About four kids going to Tijuana.
Yeah.
He literally will walk out
what?
Of the interview. And that was Private School was Matthew Modine's Losing It.
Hey, we all have those. I've brought up on the podcast that I was in a stellar straight to TV Christmas movie called Hercules Saves Christmas.
Hey, whatever, man. Yeah. It's work.
Whatever, it's work, dude.
That's right, man. Hey, that's right. If you ever want to see Brad Williams in an elf costume, Hercules Saves Christmas, or just come by my house around the holidays. I'm literally wearing that thing all the time.
Yeah, you really are.
Yeah.
Earl, does your mom love your comedy? You joke about her pussy, but does she know that you're...
Well, I think she does, but my parents died 2 months apart in 98.
Jesus.
So, it's
good
a great
job,
story,
Adam.
Though. They love you. Thanks a lot.
All right. I'm so sorry.
Fucking
all right. Well, my parents, don't love each other anymore, but so it's,
really?
It's like they died.
Well,
their love for each other died.
Well, it happens to everyone. Are your parents still alive?
Yeah.
I mean, together?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess I'm just happy.
Do you feel comfortable talking about it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they died 2 months apart.
From what?
See, Dad... well, Mom died first. She didn't believe in going to see doctors, so cancer literally ate her alive.
Okay.
You know, it's what happens when you smoke like 3 packs a day and Coke. We had a separate refrigerator for her soda.
Are you serious?
So I don't know what's in Coke, but I know it's not vitamins. So.
You're talking about Coca-Cola.
Yeah, Coca-Cola. Yeah.
Unless they want to sponsor this podcast, in which case, drink a nutritious, delicious Coca-Cola Classic today.
How dare you?
While watching Brad's special on Showtime.
Yeah, exactly.
And Dad was shortly after that.
And Mad TV.
Your dad died from knowing the reboot was coming?
Yeah, he's like, fuck, I know. 2016. I think
it died with Miss Swan, and so will I.
I think Benchwarmers killed him in 2006.
You were in that movie, weren't you?
I was.
Yeah.
You were actually great in that.
I mean, it was like a 5-second scene.
Doesn't matter. You were in it.
You're in it.
Good. Well, yeah.
Earl, can I be honest? You pop off the screen very naturally.
And I got blamed for the movie. I was 39th in the credits as Porta Potty Guy.
And well, you don't even have a name, and it's just like Porta Potty Guy.
Yeah, more reason to build a backstory.
Yeah, and blamed for what?
But the guy in the LA Times review said, how good could a movie be with a character like Porta Potty Guy in it?
Hey, that sounds like fucking
you know
buzz
what?
To me.
You stood out.
Yeah.
I did. I mean,
not your average Porta Potty guy would even get a mention.
Yep.
And, you know, I was reunited with my castmate David Spade last week in Montreal.
Yeah.
And?
He voted for me in one of the battles.
He loves you.
You know, not really. I think he just didn't, know what the hell was going on.
Those judges did seem a little aloof.
I think Kevin Hart got he had the most fun with it.
Yep, sure.
And then Whoopi, she faded in and out of having fun and, okay, what am I watching? Jeselnik killed it.
Sure.
And then Sarah Silverman and Judd Apatow were great, too.
Mm-hmm. I do want to get all into the row stuff, but I do want to just know, so you grew up...
grew up in Bel Air.
Right.
It's a great story. When I tell people that, they just assume I'm loaded.
Mm-hmm.
My dad bought the house in the 60s when Bel Air was no nicer of a neighborhood than, say, Culver City.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then there was the Bel Air fire, which destroyed every home in Bel Air but ours. Because my dad, even though he wasn't Jewish, he had like 50 water hoses running. He saved the house. And
then
it grew up into the Bel Air it is today. But we were like the Addams Family in Bel Air. Like, you know, we had like 30 dogs running around, pigs, ducks.
You had a farm in Bel Air?
Essentially. Not really. I mean, it was definitely not...
Was the Fresh Prince based on you?
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah.
When my dad was a businessman, so mm-hmm. we had a black dude named Leroy Prince, who basically was our... He was our caretaker. Butler / whatever mm-hmm. you want to call
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And I got pulled over more times when he was taking me to school. Because you got to understand, it's the 70s in Bel Air.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you have a black dude driving a green Dodge Charger, all ghettoed out.
Right, right, right.
And a white kid in the back. So there,
and they would pull him over?
Probably 10 times that I can recall.
And asking what?
They would take him out. Take him out of the car as a mm-hmm. kid. And the officer, more times than not, would go, "Miss, do you know this guy?"
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
And I'd be like, "Miss, what are you talking about, dude?"
Do you know this guy? So they thought that you were being kidnapped.
Yeah.
I mean, was the 70s a big kidnap era?
Well, it wasn't a big black era in Bel Air.
You had
two black people in Bel Air, to my knowledge. Kareem, who lived right down the street, and OJ, who was my neighbor.
What?
And OJ was awesome, man.
What?
He would throw me the football, not like every day, but like he would, "Hey man, you got that Steeler shirt on, you gotta wear a Bills shirt, brother."
And no,
like,
kidding.
Yeah,
you grew up essentially with OJ. Like how old were you?
I was probably from birth to like 12 years old.
Oh, that's prime kid sports fandom.
Yeah.
So you're looking at this guy.
I knew
like,
who he was, but I was a Steeler guy. My dad knew the owner, so every year they would win a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get a game-used Super Bowl ball from Art Rooney Sr.
What?
Autographed by the whole team. Now, if you're familiar with the Steelers in the 70s, they had 9 Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
That's right.
9 hasn't been done. 22.
That's incredible.
Steel Curtain defense, yeah. Terry Bradshaw,
Swan, Stallworth,
yeah.
Franco Harris, right, Rocky right, Blyer. Right. Mel Blunt, the cornerback, I think.
And that was like, they won 3 out of 5
four,
years or something?
4 out of 6.
Wait, Mel Blunt four, or Mel Blanc, the voice of
Mel Blanc
Bugs Bunny
was also a cornerback on the Steelers.
Right, okay.
He was real small, so he could get into those holes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So
what do you think as a kid living in Bel Air? Like, do you have a skewed just perception of reality? Because that's like
such a
nice way of living. But like, you're so normal and well-adjusted.
Well, I mean, my mom raised me that there's always someone better than you.
Yep.
So even though my parents were, say, upper middle class, you know, our next door neighbor was Howard Keck, who is one of the most oil man.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Keck
I know.
Oil, USC. Yeah. He has something to do with USC.
Yeah, there's the Keck Center. I'm not sure what they do there, but when you have a building named after you at USC, you probably did okay.
I mean, he's a bazillionaire.
Yeah.
So we definitely weren't in that category.
Sure.
So, and it's like being a comic. Like, as funny as, you know, we all are or whatever, there's always someone who's doing maybe a little better. Like, there's Russell Peters.
But no one's doing better than him. He's like the one guy that could be like, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, he could be a dick, because I don't think anyone's doing better than him. You know, Jimmy Carr is doing great in the UK and other areas. So.
Yeah.
So where are you getting your comedy influence in Bel Air? Like, what are you, you know, where are you starting to get any sort of interest in stand-up, or did you do plays? Where'd the performing come from?
I loved All in the Family as a kid, and Archie Bunker to me was just like, even though he's not a comic, I was like, wow, I love this guy.
Well, that, I mean, but he's not a stand-up in the traditional sense, but a lot of the stuff he would say would be sort of joke, but like, they were definitely sort of stand-up premises and revolutionary stuff. Like, it seems tame when you watch it now, because we have such extremes on television, but when you go back and watch those All in the Family episodes, they hold
amazing.
Up.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
They totally hold up. And then if you would compare them to essentially the Brady Bunch, you're like, this is the edgiest thing that was on television.
I mean, for the time, it was like Don Rickles' CD from, I think, 68, Live at the Sands.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to it, it seems tame now, but like, he's talking about black guys in the back of the room going, hey, have a nice summer. You know, because this was right in the riots were going down. And like, you know, hey, if you see teeth, it's not an ivory hunt. You know. It's
what?
Like,
holy shit.
Now, it probably some kid would be like, what's funny about that?
Right.
Say that in 68, you know.
Right, like, exactly. But, so. I mean, people still live. It's weird how much people don't know about, like, we all look at Don Rickles as a god.
Oh, my God.
And then, like, I have a picture with Don in my place, and people will see it and be like, oh, is that your granddad? And I'm like, I fucking wish.
Oh, my God.
I'd be living in Bel Air if that was my granddad. Holy shit.
I used to play golf with his son, Larry, who is really sad, passed away. But Larry Rickles had one of the great sports achievements in the history of the world when he the first hole of Bel Air Country Club, he was probably shooting about a 17 by the time he got to the green. Put the ball in the sand trap and hold it out for a nice score of 18 on the first hole. It was really the shot heard around the world.
that takes a lot.
I mean, to shoot an 18, it takes some
hole.
Effort.
Yeah.
But to hole out your 17th shot.
most memorable hole of his life.
Swish.
Yeah, sure.
It's like you couldn't do it, you know. So, R.I.P. So Larry. A lot of death on this.
It's all right. No, we're easing into... to the, you know.
Yeah, to the real stuff.
What, mm-hmm. And now, I mean, was OJ funny? Like, who around you?
I wouldn't say it was funny, like, but...
Who, like parents, were they crack jokes? Like, everyone gets it somewhere from within, right? Like, first, like...
Yeah, I mean, the fourth grade play, I remember I had one line, and it got a huge laugh, and like an applause break, and I'll never forget it. And it was just... these two girls. I was
one
the
cup.
Man.
Were you the director in Two Girls One Cup?
The
musical.
I was the gaffer.
Before the video ever hit,
I held a boom mic.
I knew the video was based off of an original play.
Yeah.
It's, well,
based on the metal Push by Sapphire.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I was just trying to make it back then.
What was the play?
It was called "Take It in the Ass 5."
know. Oh, the sequel to Take That. Yeah. Like,
can I be honest?
Take in the Ass 1 through 4.
No, 1 and 2 were phenomenal. It's like Beethoven's 1 and Beethoven's 2.
Absolutely.
3 and 4 missed the mark.
Oh, I mean,
they had
you.
Me at 1. They had me at hello when the girl opened the door up and. It is crazy the sequels they do in porn. I don't watch porn because it's...
You don't?
I really don't. In all seriousness, I've never really watched it. It's the close-ups.
Now, what does that mean, never really?
How many times? I've seen a porn.
Of course.
Yeah.
But you're a person.
Well, I got a really nice TV, to be honest with you. It's like 75 inches, 4K programming, all that bullshit.
Thank you. So,
to see a porn in that, it's just not appealing to me.
No.
The girl's vagina looks like that thing Boba Fett fell into.
The pit of Sarlacc?
Yes.
Why the fuck do I know that?
Because you love Star Wars.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, just the first three, which were the middle three. But like,
sure, but whatever.
Lucas is who gives a fuck.
Wait, so what was your one line in this play?
They asked me if I wanted cookies, and I was playing the milkman, and I'm like, yeah, sure.
In a Dateline NBC episode? What was it?
Well, I don't want to mention names, but there's a couple comics out there who probably could appear on that show. But comics are animals, man.
I know.
It's just the biggest bunch of pigs.
I'm sure I know who you're talking about. I mean, like, word travels quick in this, in our little world of...
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Even just right now, there's something going on with, I just saw today, with Matt Rife and Brandon Wardell.
Yeah, some Vine star.
The gay guy?
Well, so Matt Rife, I guess, posted something, and Brandon Wardell, both young comics, like, sent something to Matt, like, poking fun at his...
the fact that he looks like Bieber, essentially.
Yeah, he's a young, good-looking kid. And so, and Brandon's, poked fun at him. And Matt challenged him to a face-on-face... Face on face.
Face on face.
Now, that was the prequel to Taken in the Ass. Taken in the Ass 5. Was
Bukkake, face on face.
Face on face.
Bukkake, colon face.
Yeah.
So he challenged to a one-on-one in-person fight. And Brandon didn't show up, but then got all of these other people on Twitter, and a lot of people, and he has a substantial amount of followers, I guess, to berate Matt and dig up old tweets that he did when he was 15 that were, not favorable. But it was, 12 years ago, I think? Matt's 22 at least, I think. So digging up old shit, and now everyone's just blasting him and ruining his... Yeah, so I have no real opinion on it because I don't have all the facts, but I also...
I don't know, man. It's always just weird to me that you're always like one send button away from essentially ending your career.
But I look at Faverman and that whole thing with the fat shaming... is the girl right for airing it out? Was he right for, saying what he said? It's like...
Yeah, what is the move there? There's two sides. I think you always, favor in the side of the person getting berated, right?
Yeah, we'll look at Leslie Jones and, like, the just the horrible things that are said about her. And, like, I'm even going through a little bit of it with Jimmy Carr fans, like nothing like too
traumatic,
overly nothing like what Leslie's going through,
because they don't understand that it's a roast battle, or they just don't like that somebody they don't know the way they know Jimmy is taking the
piss. I think they thought Jimmy won,
What are you supposed to do when the judges say that Earl's the winner? Are you supposed to like be like, actually no? Jimmy won.
No, I don't want to move on.
You know what? This multi-millionaire many times over, he deserves it. I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, I've been in a room with Jimmy Kimmel once.
Yeah.
And he started the judging, basically said, I don't like Jimmy Carr reading from the clipboard as much.
And you, very smartly, your first joke was to come out with a clipboard and then just chuck it.
I don't need this.
What? Bitch.
Yeah. Dude, that's what I love, too, about... I mean, when I... I saw you when you roasted Jesse Joyce, and it was like there was a whole nother like level to your shit of not just these great jokes and delivery, but like you really made it a performance. Which
I have to, I don't really write great roast jokes. I mean, Jesse Joyce is like Comedy Central's number one roast writer.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
For the Rob Lowe roast, he probably got the first call. Hey, this is August 27th. Start writing. And
sure, we've had him on this podcast, and he like just going through his resume and so fast. So to go up against that guy, you've got to you've got to play to your strengths.
Now, yeah. Does anybody tell you that, or is that just something you innately go?
Oh, I admit to that. Like, you know, I can't let my ego go, I'm going to try and outright Jesse Joyce. I'm gonna look over at Jimmy Carr and go, I'm not going to do anything but just tell my jokes. I'd get killed, you know? So, and the same thing with the first guy I beat. You know, he is an amazing comic.
Was that Kay Trevor?
No, that was Tom Ballard.
Oh, okay.
Who's a real funny gay Australian comic, and a lot of people thought he beat Jimmy last year. So I was wow, I better, put on a show.
you did go up against Kay Trevor Wilson, who actually in the Montreal Comedy Festival the year before, I battled in the roast battle.
He's good.
And it was my first roast battle, but he definitely beat me. But my favorite joke you made of his, Kay Trevor is a large, redheaded, bearded fellow. And you said, his favorite soda is ginger ale, not because he's a redhead, but because he leaves every woman in Canada dry.
Well done, sir.
I've ever heard.
I mean you say you're not good at roast jokes. That joke works on so many levels.
Yeah. But some, I'm like Bon Jovi. I have a lot of outside writers. I don't think they want me to. Some people are weirded out. They don't want the credit.
Sure.
Well, with Kay Trevor, as you know, you can't make fun of him for being fat because he's ready for that.
Yeah.
So you have to do a joke like that where it's like, it's really, you can't really rebut that.
Right.
I don't make girls' pussies dry. There's no really.
Prove it!
Yeah. Go fuck that girl in the third row.
Now, and then one thing that people who aren't, because we're all familiar with the roast battle, obviously you are because you've been in the show, and for those who only saw it on Comedy Central, this is a show that's been going on at the Comedy Store now for how many years now?
I think close to three.
Yeah, for 3 years now, and it was always kind of an industry favorite. It was always filled up, and you were
was it an industry favorite from the get-go?
Not necessarily, because we were pretty outlaw in the early months. Like there was a rule at one point where if it was two white comics battling each other, each of them could say the N-word. And I mean hard ER, not the GGA version.
This is before it was on Periscope, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, no.
That probably wouldn't fly now.
Like Jason Tebow won a battle by using that as his last word. He was roasting Matt Nost, and he's like, we know Matt's dad left him, and we know his mom sleeps with...
Yep.
Wow.
And the room just blew up, and so then people started maybe overusing the word.
That's kind of a dangerous thing where it's like white guys with this repressed, like never been able to say, like, wait, what we can say? Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. And then they just kind of have the day.
Well,
but,
I think they got a little too comfortable because at the time you had Brian Moses hosting. Mm-hmm. He's black, and there was other black participants in the show.
Sure.
So I was like, well, if they said we can say it, let's go all in. So
now, were you asked to be a part of it from the get-go?
Not really. I was... before it was roast battle, it was just an open mic. Stephanie Simbari ran an open mic there. It was pretty bad, not because of Stephanie. It was an open mic.
Yeah. The belly room is tough late night for any show. You know, it's
on a Tuesday. Yeah. And then somehow Moses said, "Hey, do you want me to take over?" And then Kenny Lyon and Josh Martin were going to get into a fight one night, and Moses said, "Why don't you guys battle?" And that's how it started.
Wow.
And then I some of the early battles were pretty bad. You know, it was open micers who maybe weren't the most skilled orators.
Sure.
And
by the way, I love the fact that they were both so reset. I'm assuming they were both like, all right, instead of fighting, let's just
we could fight
and they went up
hurt each other
that night and just
And then Kenny Lyon's like this crazy, lovable open micer who loves just showing everyone his dick on stage and. You know, Josh Martin, you know, has a speech impediment.
Sure.
He's a really funny guy.
It's hilarious.
But, you know, it's like Family Feud up there, like the Gong Show. And then I started doing impressions of, I don't want to get sued, so I'll just say I was doing impressions of an old employee there.
Sure.
And so that added to the show, and then it just when Jeff Ross came around.
Is that really when it took up a notch?
Yeah, because he brought in like Chappelle one night, and then you know, Hannibal started showing up. You guys,
yeah.
I mean, you guys weren't coming up in the early days just because it was like, what? Why do I want to be up there with a bunch of wackos?
Yeah, and the thing about the roast battle is like you see it on television, and you see Ralphie May, and you see Jimmy Carr, and you see like these like established, you know, great comics. The start of it, I can't stress this enough, was open micers.
Yeah,
I mean, and still essentially is. Like,
yeah,
like it's it, yeah. The roast battle isn't happening with superstar comics going against each other. It's more open micers going against each other with superstar comics judging.
But it's starting to shift, isn't it? Like,
well, I think a lot of people. I know a lot of comics were asked to do it and they said no because it's brutal. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. You really have to have a thick skin, and like you think you're ready because you've been made fun of before, but these jokes.
That's a deep. It's another level of deep cut. Like
they cut.
Even for the judging, like I had a tough time. And I think there's a piece of it in everybody. Even if you are not on the surface, somebody like a Tony Hinchcliffe, who just, you know, it's, I think from the get go, he's been someone who's taken it and then slaying it immediately. Whether he had to take a lot of abuse as teasing as a kid to develop that, like, all right, well, I'm gonna fucking start slinging it back.
Right.
But he, you can just tell it comes out naturally for him, and. You know, I feel like we've all got some of that in us, but like even when I would judge a few times, I would have the comedic mind to think of like you know, a jab on somebody, and then I just wouldn't say it because I wasn't conditioned or sure. comfortable in that realm to like just knock somebody. And there were people that I knew and liked, and I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, dude, this is the place to do it. And if you don't do it, you're chastised for it.
Yeah, oh, you're gonna. If you don't do it, someone will do it to you.
Yeah. So. And so then I would try to find other ways to like be funny. And then it was like, lesson learned, man. Like, you got to just sack up. And I think there probably was a little bit of apprehension on my part to then throw it and then get something back. But it's like, dude,
sure, because then you open yourself
if you're
up.
If you're there and you're not being vulnerable, what are you doing there, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, that's, you know the drill when you walk up those belly room steps, you know, especially if you're a celebrity and guys like you have actual credits that people can shit on, even, you know, they're great. You know, you guys have great shows and stand-up specials. People are still going to look at it and go, what's, you know, fuck this
sure,
guy.
What's the angle? Yeah, exactly.
So you know that when you walk up there, you know. And
Now you've been in the audience for pretty much every roast battle.
Yeah.
And tell people, as the...
I started out as the house racist.
which, by the way, if people... The show you can watch it on Periscope, and you're still doing the house races, right?
It's a modified version, because it was just too much.
Yeah, it was too much. Too much, but in all fairness, pretty incredible in its heyday.
What's a tough sense style of humor to do every week?
Well, that's why I appreciate it, because you really, like, you have to just swing for the fence all the time.
Yeah, and I don't hit everyone.
Sure.
You know, I did it for about 8 months on my own, and I ran out of racist things and homophobic things to say, so I asked our mutual friend Whitney Rice. I was like, well, you know, a hot girl who's funny would help soften the blow.
1,000%.
Sure. And she came on for about 9 months and killed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then
so you're like the racist couple,
in the
front row.
Yeah, it's
it added so much to the show, like that. And no wonder Comedy Central picked it up, because you have the host, you have the celebrity judges, you have the actual roast itself, you have the. I mean, they didn't do the house racist for the show, obviously, but
no, I mean, we did it the year you went up against Kate Trevor.
Yeah,
and, it worked to varying degrees. You know, I think. We were so good at our job, me and Whitney, that people thought we weren't part of the show, that we were just these two. Like,
with a spotlight on them and a microphone. They're like, wow, these fans are mean. Yeah.
How they get those seats.
That, and because it happened in Canada, I think it takes it up to another level, because Canadians are so damn nice.
Yeah, but they are vicious. You know, like the first night, I said, hey, Whitney, wear a Montreal Canadiens jersey. The fans will love you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to wear a Maple Leafs jersey. And, you know, if you know anything about hockey, it's like the Bloods and Crips.
Right. Those fans hate each other.
Toronto and Montreal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they hated me.
Yeah.
Like, literally hated me.
You could insult their mothers. You could bring up bad things about their friends. But if you wear a
Maple Leafs.
Oh, my God. It's on.
So, I mean, I almost went home the next day.
No shit.
Yeah, because I was like, I can't do this for four more days. And Jason Reitman was like, dude, just, you know, maybe don't wear the Maple Leafs jersey. And, just go all in against, like, the Jews in the room. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, do what you do in the belly room. You know, talk about, you know, the wackiness. And, you know, so the second night I did, like, almost a Rick Rude style speech against the industry.
That's,
you know,
pro wrestler, people.
Yeah, that's the great legendary Rick Rude.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, you Jews in the room, you know, I've been doing comedy for 15 years and this is the fucking only time I can get on TV. You stupid Jews.
I love that it's like, hey, wearing a jersey of the opposing hockey team, that's taking it too far. Just say something bad about the Jews.
Yeah. We run the town, run the business. And I got like three cards from like APA agents. They're going, hey, we're one of those Jew agents. Call us. And then they never got back to me.
What has been your most favorite part about Roast Battle? What's been your most memorable moment? What has been something that a joke or something you've heard where you were like, man, even for the thick skin I've got, that was fucking, I can't believe somebody said that.
I mean, I would say my favorite moment is probably Whitney. This was back in the N-word days.
the Willie Nelson
days.
Song?
Yeah. I mean, we had the Dark Ages. There was an Ice Age. Then we had the N-word days.
Well, there was different eras.
There was.
And they used to go to the house racist to vote. You know, there was two white comics roasting, and I think it was Moses said, well, house racist, who do you guys want to win? And Whitney's like, you know, she's beautiful, looks like Julia Roberts, and she played it up like she was a real country bumpkin, and she points at, I think it was Nate Craig, and goes, well, I guess we have to give it to Nate, because he dresses the most like a... It's like, geez,
wow.
The room just blew up. And it was just, I mean, that's the most memorable.
Sure.
And then there was, you know, Whitney again. Leslie Jones came at her one night and said something like, shut up, you white bitch. Kidding, but, you know, kind of aggressively.
Sure.
And Whitney was like, hey, Leslie, congratulations on getting the cover of National Geographic.
Oh, my God.
Just perfect timing.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Just
oh my God.
The room blew up. Leslie was silent. It just had no comeback for it.
I mean, like, because there's...
What do you say to that?
There's verbal... There's literally, like, verbal punches to the face where you're just stunned. You're like, I got nothing.
I mean, just... and Leslie's, you know, obviously an amazing talent.
Yeah.
And then recently, Doug Fager, who's one of the great roasters... him and Hinchcliffe were having... Hinchcliffe was judging, and Doug has a dead brother, you know, and again, it got brought up in the roast, and Tony was just hammering him with dead brother jokes.
Oh, my Jesus.
Doug just looked
Does that
at
ever...
Him.
Real quick, does that ever... Do you... I mean, was it getting too much?
No. Doug's fine with it. He knows it's coming, and Doug was like... Said something to the effect of, Tony, relax. You wish my brother was alive so he could have seen your special. I would have been one more viewer. And the room blew up, and then Doug waited the perfect amount of time. He said, I'm just kidding, Tony. Nobody saw your special.
Good night.
Such perfect time.
Most
comics would have rushed that second part.
Right.
Doug, like, did a Cyrus from the Warriors and just, like, told the crowd, I got one more.
I got one more. Here
it
goes.
Did Tony...
The room blew up so much that Tony... and obviously Tony's very capable of, you know, firing back, but Tony was, you know, just, no.
You know what? Good on him for recognizing that moment.
Yeah, Tony could have kept it going for sure and probably gotten Doug back, but he was like, you know what? That's a pretty good burn.
Yeah. And now, have you ever seen it? Because some people might say yes to being a roaster and without really thinking about it and without really preparing themselves for what's going to be coming their way. Have you seen anything like? Has anyone taking it too personal? Like, have people wanted to then fight afterward? Or like, has anything like that happened at the roast battle?
There was one night, it was a girl-on-girl battle.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Kim Congdon, who's one of the better roasters.
Sure.
And I forget who she was going up against. Amy Cheapo.
Okay.
And Amy's a great comic, very cunty personality, but it really... no, she's awesome, but like, it's almost like a wrestling character she does. And Kim was getting the better of Amy. And Amy started to well up. Like, it was starting to, you know, hurt her pretty bad. And Kim was like, Amy, what's wrong? I think your eyes are melting. And just and then one of Amy's or one of, I think Amy's friends got on stage and was like, Kim, you bitch. And it was like, you got a little wild.
Oh, wow.
So that's probably the, there's never really been a fight.
Okay.
You know, I mean, one black dude wanted to fight me once, kind of, because he came
audience
up to
member?
Me. Yeah, he came up to me after the show. He's like, yo, man, what's with the racist bullshit? I'm like, oh, you know, dude, it's a character like Archie Bunker. And he looks at me and goes, who the fuck is Archie Bunker? And I'm like, hey, Moses, this guy wants to talk to you. And I took off like fucking Carl Lewis.
Yeah.
Now even that was Carl Lewis on a moped right there.
Yeah.
Great solid impression.
Turning into the black guy from Police Academy. Michael Winslow, if you're listening.
There it is. If when you're in Montreal and you're having these judges critique you, is it nerve-wracking? Do you want to fight? You did fire back at like Jeff, and I think you did to Kevin Hart, right?
No. I was, you know, it's different because in some battles in L.A., the crowd votes. So my strategy, when that's the case, is to go after the judges, get the room going, and the crowd will love me.
The room loves it when you rip the judges, don't they?
Yeah. But, you know, in Montreal, you're playing for $25,000 and other prizes. So I'm like, you need the judges' votes.
Right.
So the first night with David Spade and Kevin Hart, I was like, yeah, you guys are great, man. Good job. Yeah. I agree with your votes.
I saw Right Along 40 times.
Right. I love that. I mean, I had one, had a couple lines about Kevin Hart I wanted to do, but he was so nice and like such a cool dude.
Yeah.
And he voted for me. So, and then the second night I battled was, who was it?
Rogan and Kimmel?
No, it was Kimmel and, Kimmel.
You battled Kay Trevor, right?
I know. The second night I battled Jimmy Carr, and Jimmy Carr had the better jokes, but I think Kimmel and Rogan liked my presentation.
Yeah.
You know, better, and I think some of Jimmy's fans don't realize that, because they're like, well, Jimmy's jokes were better. And Jimmy's like, unbelievable.
He's unreal.
Yeah, we've had him on the guest on the podcast, and he plowed through the roast battle the year before.
Yeah.
Where, like, no one could touch him. He's not human. Because it's insane.
Yeah, you have to. I think the clipboard, even he laughed when I did.
Yeah.
And I've never seen him in 2 years of seeing him roast now ever break.
Yeah.
He's like Christian Bale in American Psycho. He's just, there's nothing there.
He's locked in his machine, right.
But he had the better jokes. I'll admit to that. But it's, on the Comedy Central website, it says the battles will be judged on crowd response, a presentation, and the judge's interpretations.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like I winked at Jimmy Kimmel twice. I don't know Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
I know Seth Rogen even less. And I think in their judging, they were like, well, Jimmy was more consistent, but Earl had the higher highs and the lower lows, and I like to ride the wave. And so
it's a great assessment. Did Jimmy say anything to you after?
He couldn't have been any nicer. He hugged me.
Love,
you know,
that.
He sought me out when I was getting into my cab, and he hugged me. And like,
it's awesome.
He's like, he's amazing. So I don't know. I mean, his fans are a little aggressive for my taste. You know, you suck. You bribe the judges. You know,
of course.
Skakel's a fag. And
I love the fact that people are taking a roast like it's the NBA finals.
Yeah,
they're going. It's like, were you entertained?
It's competition, man.
Yeah.
People get heated.
Oh, I'm bummed out I didn't win. You know?
Sure. Well, obviously $25,000 would have helped.
But I'm competitive. I wanted that trophy. You know.
Sure.
I think back to every joke I could have said about Sarah Tiana, and you know,
have you been second guessing it?
Oh, absolutely. But Sarah was very smart. You know, there's a lot of strategy in these things.
And, how so?
Like, I love to go second because I'm a counterpuncher. You know, I don't like to do an actual joke. You know, if you said, Earl, you have a big head, I like to fire back at you with what you look like.
Right. Because guess what? That's how you get the upper hand, I feel like.
Yeah.
You get
rebuttals.
Because people innately want to hear something be topped.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so Sarah knew, I think she said she had watched all my battles and noticed that I always go second. So she made me go first.
Oh, fuck.
See, look at that. Someone like studying game film.
Oh, you have to, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've seen Jimmy Carr every battle. I'm like, you know, no one's ever really called him out on the clipboard. So I'm going to go out there with my own.
Right.
Throw it in the crowd and kind of fluster them, hopefully. And it worked.
Yeah.
And so Sarah, and then Sarah's jokes, she didn't have one joke that didn't kill. And all I needed was for one to not do well. And I could have jumped on it.
Right.
But she beat me. And then Kate Trevor was, he's so scary to battle. Because he just looks at you. Right? Just like, okay, I'm fat. What else you got?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's very much like Olivia Grace, who, you know, Olivia knows what's coming. Oh, you're going to say I'm fat. You're going to say I have, you know, bad skin or whatever.
Sure.
Doesn't faze her.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, you're fucking ugly. So there.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that definitely helps you. It's like that scene from 8 Mile where Eminem talks about, oh, say, yeah, so you're going to rap about my mom and this thing, right. And then it just takes away all the ammunition.
Well, you have to, like, I know where people are going to hit me because I think I'm the oldest roaster.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that there's going to be an age joke. There's going to be a Kennedy joke. There's going to be Earl's not successful because, you know, I'm not, to be honest with you. I mean, you know.
Hey, you were just on Comedy Central on something that got a lot of.
And guess what, man? It's all about stacking the chips.
Yeah, oh, I'll take it. But I mean, you know, you guys have, you know, your IMDb pages are like, you know, a couple pages long. Well, no, but I mean, you know, I know that's a target.
Sure.
You know,
I want to hear about this Kennedy connection.
Well, it's very simple. It's just, my aunt is Ethel. She was married to Robert, the second brother that unfortunately got assassinated.
Right.
So, you know, I think Sarah had a joke about that. So did Kate Trevor. So did everyone.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carr. I mean, it's definitely not the best.
Now, I didn't know about that. So for me, I'm like, you know, I guess there's some info that a lot of people aren't going to know that, like, you just have to, when you hear it, go, okay, cool, I guess that's true. Let me judge it based on that. But because I didn't know, it didn't have as much of a hit for me.
Well, I mean, like, the Skakel family back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s were actually had a lot more money than the Kennedys.
That's nuts.
Because of that company.
Like, right.
Grandfather, who I never met, and he was the only guy really in America to make money in the Depression because he would drive by oil refineries and he'd be like, hey, can I get your waste? And they thought he was fucking crazy. I was like, we'll give it to you. And he turned it into, like, products like your mic holders, like graphite and,
what?
You know, like,
oh, shit.
Any graphite product you touch, from golf clubs to tennis rackets to baseball bats to, you know.
Dildos?
Yeah, cock rings.
graphite cock rings.
Grandfather gets a cut off.
That's insane.
But my dad went deep on an oil project in the Amazon that if it would have hit, I'd own every comedy club in the country.
I was just going to say, holy
but it did
shit.
Not.
Oh,
so that's why we grew up.
Yeah.
You know, upper middle class.
Yeah, like so, doing well, but yeah, to the point where, yeah, that would have been. But hey, that's what the greats do. I mean, they talk about Elon Musk made all that money with PayPal and then went bankrupt trying to start Tesla.
Yeah,
and then but thankfully Tesla worked out for him, and now it is what it is today. But yeah, he lost almost $1 billion.
I mean, it's you go deep.
And, yeah,
you know. But luckily, my mom, who's a Southern hillbilly, like some Cartersville, Georgia, where I think they still have weekly lynchings.
God.
I mean, it is bad. I mean, it's deliberate.
I mean,
as well.
I mean, it's so funny because that's the stereotype of the South, and then when you go to certain parts of the South, you're like, oh.
Yeah,
that shit's true.
See, I'm so naive. I just am still wanting to believe that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, I mean, the second time I ever heard the N-word was in Cartersville, Georgia. First time was up at Bel Air Country Club.
Well, that's kind of
God. I wish I could say that word just for the story.
Yeah,
I mean,
you heard it all the time, huh?
Well, at Bel Air Country Club, you know, I remember I shot bogey golf on the front nine of.
That's good.
From the men's tees.
That's one above par.
Yeah.
So that's good.
For a 13-year-old kid who never really practiced, 13,
that's amazing.
It out.
Yeah.
And I go to my uncle, hey, Uncle Rick, I just shot bogey golf on the front nine of Bel Air for the men's tees. And he just looks at me and goes, Earl, that's blank golf. Now,
I don't even know what that means.
Now, not knowing what that word meant,
yeah.
I'd never heard it before. Next day, I go down to the caddy yard. Of course, they're all black down there.
Oh, no.
I'm like, hey, guys, my Uncle Rick said I shot blank golf. And
no.
Record scratch.
The biggest, blackest caddy went up to me. He's like, hey, Earl, we love your uncle because he tipped really well.
Yeah.
But don't ever say that word again. I'm like, why not?
didn't even know. Oh, God.
Well, that's just the wide-eyed innocent. Like, yeah. You have 13, no idea.
I mean, I think I might have heard that word in a Clint Eastwood movie, like Escape from Alcatraz.
Sounded cool.
Like, yeah, he talked to the cool guy and called him that word. That sounds good.
Clint Eastwood said it. It's got to be.
It's got to be badass.
It's the best movie scene ever. Did you ever see Escape from Alcatraz?
No, I never did.
There's a scene his first day on the yard where, you know, he's just kind of stumbling around, looking around the yard, and he goes up the black stairs, and it's the higher he goes up, the fewer blacks on each step, and he finally gets to the top of the stairs, kind of looks at the main black guy, starts to walk back down, and the black guy's like, now there's two reasons you didn't sit down next to me. Either you're scared, or you just hate.
Yeah.
So he sits down next to him, kind of pauses, and goes, eh, I just hate.
Oh my God!
Like, so that's
that gruff accent.
That's in the '70s.
Yeah.
Like, oh wow. What's that word, man?
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so amazing.
So I mean,
if you talk about if you did get enough money to buy a comedy club, would you you think you actually would have followed through with that?
No, because I don't think if you're an owner, you're taken seriously as a comic.
Yeah.
You know, like I.
It's like you got Vinny Brandon. That's about it.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's Rick Bronson, I think, at one point was a comic.
Right. Might still do cruise ships every now and then.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone thinks of him as a comic.
It's no.
Like, oh, you own the comic strip and the thing in Minnesota.
Yeah. House of Comedy. Yeah. But yeah. So it's. Yeah, you kind of do. It's one or the other.
I would like to own one on the DL, and I've always wanted to be the talent coordinator at the store, but it would be an anonymous. No one would know it was me.
You wouldn't want anybody to know?
No. Because I see how hard of a job Adam has.
So tough.
Well,
or anyone.
Yeah, it's a thankless job because no one's ever going to get all the spots that they want or they feel they deserve, and then there's only so many spots to go around, so you certainly can't make everybody happy.
Yeah, and you're going to make some big-name comic or two.
Sure, and you got to have some sort of balance in terms of you got to have... you know, you got to keep the legends and the established guys, and you got to at the same time develop new talent. It's it's a thankless job. And I mean, speaking of the Comedy Store, I really want people to go back to listen to your podcast.
Yeah, Inappropriate Earl, by the way.
Yeah,
which is a great podcast.
SoundCloud and iTunes.
There it is.
There you go. And you interviewed the old manager of the Comedy Store,
Tommy.
Well,
I mean,
and people need to listen to that.
Yeah, that was an exclusive, really incredible conversation.
Well, I had heard through the grapevine that he had asked Mark Maron to go on his podcast, and I don't know what Maron's response was, but I'm sure it was two words, with the second word being off.
Face off?
Yeah.
He was just
puck off with Joe Barton.
Wow. I believe that's the first puck off reference we've had. Shout out to Joe Bartnick and Fraser Smith.
Man, oh man. Why do I...
So you call up Tommy and you go, hey.
You want to talk? Come on my podcast. And first episode was like 2.5 hours. And I actually had a show. I'm not bragging. I was like... hosting an open mic in Montebello or something. So I was like, Tommy, I got to get going, but if you want to come back, thinking he'd never come back.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I'll come back Thursday. I'm like, oh, fuck. And he spoke for another 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And you got a lot of great stuff out of him. And, you know, Tommy's a very articulate dude. And for as much as you agree or don't disagree with his philosophies and insights and the way his mind operates, he... talks with everything that you asked him and that he spoke about was very candid and to the point. Yeah. And
it paints an accurate picture of what the Comedy Store was like under his regime.
You were there before him too, yeah?
A little bit with Duncan, but like you know, like you should have been past there a long time ago.
Yeah.
Are you past there?
Not yet.
That's crazy to me. Like that.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I don't hang out there enough.
But I mean, you also don't need it, though. Like, you know, you've got TV specials, you've got on Showtime.
Nice.
You tour the world.
Yeah.
So I don't like, I needed it because, you know, I needed, like, I think D'Elia went up to me once after, like, my first set there as a paid regular. He's like, dude, I didn't even know you did comedy. Like, it's like any minute, like, it's like,
yeah.
He wasn't giving me shit. He was
complimentary.
Like, I've just always seen you kind of hanging out. I'm like, oh.
Right.
You guys were going up at different times.
Yeah.
Or?
Different times. We were going up in different time zones. And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Like, I don't hate on guys like you who, you know, you're on TV, you got great spots, and he took care of you, and, like, that's the way it should be.
Yeah, and that's what you're striving for. You're striving to be the guy that gets to the point where he takes care of you. So when you finally did become that paid regular, you finally got your name up on the store. Like,
yeah, what was that like?
Yeah,
that's pretty neat, you know. And I waited so long that my name is in the. It couldn't have been put in a better place.
Yeah.
It's in the front center. I mean, right. You literally couldn't have.
You see it from Sunset Boulevard.
Who is around your name?
It's at Brad Williams eye level.
I mean,
it's right there.
Just fucking hang your arm on. Well, Rob Schneider's name is right next to it. I'm forever linked to Rob Schneider.
There you go.
So, and Jeselnik's, I think, is around there. And,
yeah.
What do you love about the store?
I like the spots, man, just to be seen as a comic by people. You know, mm-hmm. like when you're doing comedy for 10 or 11 years and, like, people don't know you do it, or, you know, because you're not, you know. You know, I mean, like, you guys, you probably only saw me doing the championship comedy thing.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. I met Earl at something called Championship Comedy, which was an attempt to blend wrestling and comedy together. So, like, the comics would talk trash and, like, cut promos, and then we would it was sort of like I don't want to say a roast battle because it wasn't those types of jokes, but you would definitely, within your set, talk smack about your opponent,
right? Yeah,
and then the audience would decide who won. It was fun. I'm glad I got to tell Eric Bischoff to fuck off, which was great. He loved it, and so that was a cool thing. But yeah, that's where I met you. I had no idea who you were.
Yeah. Oh no, and I don't blame you. Like, mm-hmm. Some comics would be like, "What are you talking about, man? Fuck you! I do comedy."
Well, because you're mainly, I mean, the Improv or Factory frequently, or
TV spots. You know, at the Improv and the Store, and the Factory. So it's why should you guys know who I am? Because you know, back then I certainly wasn't on TV. It's,
yeah. Well, now when you're all clean cut, when I met you, you had. The who are the brothers from the
Hanson brothers?
Yeah, the Hanson brothers haircut from Slapshot, and you would always go on stage with a hockey jersey.
Yeah,
and you have this very dry delivery, very slow paced dry delivery, but I loved it, and it was fun to discover you and other comics there, and to see wrestlers try stand up
was brutal.
To see to see Rob Van Dam go up there and be like, I'm gonna go on stage as the Stoner and kill it. You're like, oh wow.
Oh, stick to wrestling.
And he's one of my favorite wrestlers. So
I love him.
And he's the nicest guy in the world. And I love the fact that he tried it.
I mean, I had Bischoff on my podcast, and like, I was a fucking little kid.
Sure,
it's like he was.
Who's that?
Ran WCW, so it was,
what's that?
WWF and WCW. Those are the two main.
I know WWF.
Yeah, so those are two main wrestling companies, and Eric Bischoff ran WCW,
and they beat WWF for 2 years in the ratings, which is it's like.
Basically, if the CFL started being the NFL in ratings, that's what that's like.
Because he was the marketing genius, and he was like, "Well, I'm going to sign all the WWF older stars like Hogan and Savage and the Warrior, and then we're going to develop the cruiserweights, which the WWF wasn't using.
No,
and then
the NWO.
NWO was like, I mean, the end.
We're speaking a foreign language to Adam right now. Yeah, he's not tuning out.
Adam's like, "What the fuck?" What's NWO? Isn't that the Alex Jones Network?
good Alex Jones reference. Yeah.
Is that another
podcast?
Wrestling reference?
No, that's a conspiracy radio guy.
Prisonplanet.org for your latest in 9/11.
Conspiracy.
Oh, shit.
I love listening.
Are you a conspiracy guy?
No, I'm naive, you might say, and I believe everything happened as I saw it. I don't think... mm-hmm. You know, 9/11 was an inside job and stuff like that. But I'm not saying it's not. But
it's fun to hear the guys that quote unquote know, and they're so passionate about it.
Well, there's that documentary, I think Loose Change, it's called.
Yeah,
it's probably the number one 9/11. Mm-hmm. And the guy had me for like 40 minutes. You're like, okay, that could happen. I mean, I guess steel doesn't melt. That, you know, how do the buildings fall down? And he's like, I have documented proof that 9 of the 19 hijackers are alive. And like, all right, that's where he lost me. They're not, you know, and that the plane that flew into the Pentagon, it was a missile.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, where's that plane full of people? It's like they're being kept on a hidden island. It's like,
oh, Jesus,
just lost.
That's the new show Wrecked on TBS. Yeah.
That'll be on after Bar Rescue on Spike TV.
That's so fucked.
Yeah, it's funny when someone has you going like, yeah, this could fucking, yeah, I'm in.
Well, when you don't know much
crazy.
About something,
okay.
Yeah, you don't have all the facts, so you let somebody else tell you, and sometimes people are persuasive enough.
Well, it's like with the Kennedy, both assassinations, you're like, oh, yeah.
Is that weird for you, being that it's your fucking family?
You know, if I was blood...
Yeah,
it would be a little more. Oh, that's But since it's just by marriage, it hasn't really affected my life too much. But,
sure,
you know, like there was some documentary on the other night that said Sirhan couldn't have killed RFK because the blood splatter came from the back, and Sirhan was in the front.
Okay,
and you start going, oh yeah, I mean, you know, it's possible,
but like that's your uncle.
Yeah. Well, my aunt was right there. I mean, if she would have been killed, I would have been like, oh, man. That's
Yeah. Yeah, so when, like, people have theories about, like, Robert Kennedy killed Marilyn Monroe because she was going to go public or something. Like,
that's possible.
I mean, do you hear that and go, but that's...
I mean...
That's got to be weird for you.
It's weird, you know, and then, you know, the Skakel family's had some issues, you know.
Oh, when you Google... Skakel and Kennedy, there's definitely some articles that come up that our friend Alex Jones might be a part of.
Yeah, if you Google Earl Skakel comedy, literally, the first thing is my YouTube video opening up for Jeff Ross, and then like the next 50 are like murder stories and like, you know,
shit, really?
But the YouTube video, I killed it.
Does your taking Viagra story pop up on Google?
No, I take the gas station dick pills.
Do you really?
I mean, now the fuck, I'm 47. I gotta like, you know, you get to my age and you'll, you know,
it's a thing, huh?
I mean, I don't know where you guys are in the dick life, but
I'm fine right now. I still get.
How old are you?
34.
And how old are you?
32.
I mean, you guys.
But
still
I'm like, but I'm like 68 and dwarf.
Well, is it? I mean, like,
I mean, that's a cheap joke. I'm sorry. I do.
Well, I'm gullible. So.
Yeah, but it does raise an interesting question.
Sure.
How old are you really?
Yeah,
I'll never tell.
Read. Yeah, but I mean, like, I read some. There was an interview you did where you had a Viagra story where it's like,
oh, I did. Yeah, I think my friend's dad had died, and you know, we went to the house to console him, and he brings down this monstrous bag of blue pills. I mean, like,
oh my God, like, is that what he died from?
I know this is no video here, but just hundreds of the blue pills.
Imagine like, Santa's sack, but with Viagra.
And he just throws them to me and says, "Oh, my dad doesn't need them anymore." So I had never taken Viagra before. Yeah. I was probably your guys' ages. So I'll just take one. I wasn't even having sex with anyone at the time. I'll just take one, see how it goes. Nothing. Maybe I should take another one.
No.
You know, nothing. If I was supposed to... Stuff is supposed to work. Take a third one.
Oh, my God.
Ended up taking four. Nothing happened. So I get home that night. I start turning beet red from my hairline to my, like, navel. Nothing down by my dick. I mean, my dick, you couldn't have got it any softer. I mean, it was like a noodle. I wake up the next day with the biggest boner you've ever... I mean, I could have been in porn that day. I was just like... Just blood vessels on top of blood
vessels.
Did
it hurt?
It was painful. So I went to the doctor, and I took the pills.
He goes, here's a contract.
Yeah.
You start tomorrow.
I'll see you in Vivid Video.
Take it in the ass six. Yeah. Films in Burbank.
Yeah, you'll be co-starring with Lexington Steel and Mandingo. And
all right, for someone who doesn't watch porn ever, you just named two male porn stars.
I'm obsessed with male porn stars. Just how big their dicks are. Like... And so the doctor was like, well, Earl, let me see what you took. And he's like, dude, you know these are like 40 milligram tablets. Now, the normal dosage for Viagra, like if you guys were to take one tonight, you'd take a 10 milligram one.
Holy
shit,
dude.
And you took 4
right, so
40.
I took that's 160.
Like, I can't do math. That's like 22 million milligrams.
So your dick didn't even know how to respond. It was
no, it was like, and my doctor basically said, you just got to jack off until you come. And it's like, I came here for you to tell me that.
Like, you could have just let me stay at home for 5 more minutes. I'm pretty sure I would have done that.
This couldn't have been a phoner. And so that's...
And that's all it took. That was the prescription.
Yeah, just jack off. And like, you went to medical school for 12 years to tell some guy in his early 30s, jack off.
Now, was that awkward walking into the doctor with a super hard dick?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like four, like... my doctor sees primarily older people, but he's known my family for years, so he, he sees me when I get a checkup. And so there's like 4 90-year-olds in there. I ended up fucking 3 of them.
That's how you got better.
And then the fourth one had a heart attack. I couldn't get to her.
When she saw what happened to the first three, like, oh my goodness. Yeah, yeah.
When I shot all over the first one.
Poor Ethel.
She just blew it.
Poor Ethel.
Come on, it's a headshot.
That's insane. The gas station dick pills, that seems very unsafe.
Well, they basically put crushed up Viagra in them. You know, that's really, they put all the bogus ingredients on there, like niacin and all that stuff, but it's crushed up Viagra. I mean, I don't take them like every hour. I just, one a week, one every 2 weeks. I mean,
sure.
I've dated some younger women in the last couple of years, and they have sex drives beyond anything I've ever seen.
It's insane, huh?
So, I gotta, please them, I guess.
Yes. I mean, I guess that's my job.
Are you looking to get married at 47?
No, I'm, I never say never, but,
You're open to it.
No kids, because, I'm still a struggling comic. I was on TV, but this business. Yep. You got a special. Yeah.
Ups and downs, man.
1 week, and 2 months later.
Right.
So what else you got?
Yeah. I literally had that meeting with someone where it's like, all right, so the second special just aired, so when's the next one? I'm like, I did 2 specials in 2 years.
Yeah, let me sit on that for a minute.
Just a little bit. Like, hey, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year. They're my team. They could go another 10 years, not make the playoffs. I'd be like, yeah, but we won the Super Bowl. Yeah. I'm happy. So, what the fuck? I mean, obviously you're hoping that you could parlay this now into something else.
Yeah, I mean, to be in the, I've been told I'm in the, I guess you could say, the Comedy Central family now. Like,
yeah.
On their radar and, like.
I think there's definitely an open door situation for you to, like.
Maybe get on At Midnight.
Yes, bring them stuff, yes.
Do that, maybe. I don't know if they have a premium blend or what their stand-up show is now, but
House Party.
Yeah, Adam Devine's. Adam Devine's House Party, and just baby steps.
That's all it is. It's stacking the chips, and I guess until you get to like Will Smith status, and then you can just.
Who's that? What room does he book? Does he book a room?
How do you? I want to know, because you spend the Comedy Store. Whenever you're there, I just feel very comfortable, and I like my night when I see you there. And I want to know, when you're there, is there ever a because you're always in a great mood and you're always funny and fun to be around. Is there ever a night when Earl doesn't like being at the Comedy Store?
Oh yeah, when I get these fucking Palmers, it's a phrase I've coined. Hey Earl, great set tonight. I'm like, I just got here. I haven't even gone up yet.
I see.
I've had that happen.
That really?
That's guy insane. The other night said, hey, loved your closer. I'm like, I haven't even gone on yet, dude.
Did you say it to him?
Yeah. I'm like, oh man, my bad.
My bad. That is like a significant. There should be some sort of a bigger apology.
A little more than a my bad.
I just took a stab in the dark and completely lied. And
yeah.
Well, I don't want to say who it is, but the original Palmer was, I was opening up for Rob Schneider once at the Canyon Club. Have you guys ever?
Oh, yeah. I've been to the Canyon Club, yeah.
Have you done a show there, or you've seen shows?
I've done a show there, and it's a tough
stuff.
It's a tough-ass room.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
I made several Olive Garden jokes and destroyed for about 4.5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean.
It was tough. It's a big room.
There's no barrier to the bar, the noise is like, I hate to say cancer, but it just spreads from the bar to the.
And then all of a sudden someone orders a margarita, and you're like, all right, so now I got to fight a blender.
Right. Yeah.
During my set.
Everything.
Yeah.
So, but there's one entrance into the Canyon Club, so I was just bringing up Rob. I see the guy walk in, comes up to me, goes, dude, great set. And I'm like, dude, I just saw you walk in. There's one exit in this place. I hope Great White never plays here, but I mean, like. Shit.
Wow. Good Great White reference.
They killed their fan base.
Yeah.
80% of them.
So those are the nights when you don't enjoy it.
I don't like fake people, and we're in the wrong business. I'm in the wrong business. I guess we all are in the wrong business if you don't like fake people. I like you guys have always been nice to me from day one. I clearly can't help you guys. You're just nice to me. Not everyone is like that.
Yeah, but you can't go into any, as a person, like situation, friendship, thinking that. That's unhealthy.
Well, yeah, but that's L.A. comedy is unhealthy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Now, on the flip side, you give the benefit of the doubt at all to some of these Palmers to like where you're like, oh, you're young. You just don't know. You'll figure it out. Like, you're just, you know.
I mean.
Or are you like, no, man, if you're in this, because there is, you know, that's one of the things I found when I graduated acting school out here and then I jumped into the business. There was not a lot of prep. And even stand up, like I just felt fortunate to befriend some people that had more experience and that, you know, took the interest in sharing some tidbits to me, like, hey, don't do this, don't do that. I saw you doing that. Like when I posted something about doing a Bringer show and Chris Rock popped in on the main room, I've mentioned this before, and I went on Facebook, was like, I opened for Chris Rock tonight. I think it was Brett Ernst who was like, yo, bro, you fucking didn't open for Chris Rock. And he like made me really hear out loud what I did, and I. Man, it was such a fucking big shift for me to go, oh, don't do that. Like, you did that because you needed some sort of, just do the shit.
Some validation,
and
yeah.
And so, like, but there's a lot of people that don't have any sort of outside influence. But I guess, fucking, you don't feel bad for them at all.
I mean, I like to help people, you know. Like, mm-hmm. So I love, I can't give someone advice on how to make it, clearly, but, like, I can tell them what not to do, you know.
Sure.
Like,
have you?
I don't, like, volunteer it, but, like.
If the moment presents itself.
I had someone, a similar situation, said they opened up for Dave Chappelle. I'm like, dude, you went on first. He went on, like, 5 hours later. That's mm-hmm. not opening up for Dave Chappelle.
Right.
You're going to get a real bad reputation here, and, like, even with some people in championship comedy, I might have tried to steer them from the over-promotional side of things, mm-hmm. And
I know who you're talking about.
Well, they meant well, but absolutely. It's like, dude, you're in L.A. This is the number one city for bullshitters in the world. This is like the NFL for bullshitting.
Yeah.
So when you come from another town or state, you might have been the best bullshitter in, Doylestown, Pennsylvania, but this ain't Doylestown. This is L.A. So you're not going to bullshit you or me.
Do you think your fandom of pro wrestling has helped you in comedy? Like, because you do kind of like to create these characters where whether it be the racist character or whether it be some of the other characters that you've done in Roast Battle, like you've sort of developed these.
I mean, yeah, because I'm a huge fan of Rick Rude and Ric mm-hmm. Flair and the promos. Like in Montreal last week, we had to do wrestling promos basically before each battle, and it was awesome. And the whole Comedy Central production team were like, you're the best at these, because I was just channeling, okay, what would Rick Rude say about Tom Ballard, and then Jimmy Carr. Like,
there's a sentence you never thought you'd say to yourself.
Yeah.
What would ravishing Rick Rude do?
But he was the best.
Oh, it was like, awesome.
He was like this, he had a great body and he had a mustache, like the Burt Reynolds mustache. Mm-hmm. And he would just call everyone in the crowd fat slobs and, who wants the rude awakening, which was when he would kiss an audience member. And, against Jimmy Carr, I did a full on, like, well, Jimmy Carr, you won last year, but that's because I wasn't in it, brother. And,
it's all theater.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have to do the theater. Like,
right.
The Kiss, Bells and Whistles. Kiss are average musicians.
Right.
They would tell you that.
Sure, they have. Yeah.
Through their music, they've told us that.
Yeah.
You really think they've gotten away with just decent singing abilities, but, like, a performance that...
Have you ever seen Kiss live?
Yeah.
Have you seen
it? Oh, live, no.
I've seen, obviously, tapes of them.
Right. I've seen videos of Mini Kiss, the all-dwarf cover band.
I have seen Mini Kiss live.
That's crazy.
And I will say, they were terrible.
How dare you? That's my people.
All right, two of their songs were good.
I think my favorite Kiss tribute band is, they're in Seattle, and they all four dress as Gene, and they call it Gene's Addiction.
Okay, well, that's just a home run.
There you go,
that's
pretty clever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you see Kiss live, and you're like, this is the greatest band ever. Like,
right.
Because the blazers, the
pyro,
and the drummer twirling sticks that are on fire, and that's what I try and do with Roast Battle. I'm not the best. Out of the 16 people last week in Montreal, I was probably the worst roast writer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have Mike Lawrence, who's won Emmys. Jimmy Carr is like numerous specials.
Mike Lawrence has won Emmys?
I'm not sure for what, but I know he's won them.
Wow.
Inside Amy
makes sense.
I'm sure that's it.
Right.
So that's the caliber. Tony Hinchcliffe's got a Netflix special.
Right.
On.
Do you go into now battles post Montreal with like extra confidence, or are you going to like now challenge some people that are?
I don't like doing them, so I won't. Okay. I'm like Brock Lesnar. I only do the pay per views, baby.
There we go.
So, because I don't like doing them, like right. I don't like.
Well, they're a lot of work. Like people don't realize that you don't just sit down and be like, all right, so it's four jokes. This one. Yeah. Like you do
specificity matters.
Yeah, you got to do your research, as we discussed earlier. You got to like watch tape. And see, yeah. like, what have people talked about before? You don't want to repeat a joke that someone else has said about this person or in general. I mean,
I think for Tom Ballard, my first opponent, I had 107 jokes.
No
and
shit.
That's in 2 weeks' time
to
and
do then, four.
Yeah, to pick out four good ones.
Yeah,
five if it went to overtime.
Right, right,
and,
right.
And against Jimmy Carr, because they only had 2 days' notice, I probably had maybe 30. None great, but I knew like the way I would present them, it would take me, hopefully take me over the edge. And then like for Sarah, it was the finals were the toughest, the live finale, because I had to write for Sarah, and then I had to write for Kay Trevor and Mike Lawrence because I didn't know who was going to win.
Right.
Oh, so you have to write TV quality jokes for three people on 30 hours notice.
Ugh.
So
and that's why comedy's so great, because there were some moments I can't remember what joke it was. Or against what opponent, but where you did one and it just completely, and you had had a couple killers right before that, and then you did one and it just kind of fell flat, and you even comment, you go, all right, well, fuck.
Well, that was against Jimmy Carr, and it just, you know, you go back now and go, what could I? I knew he was going to do a Kennedy joke about my family. So he has a situation with his father where they don't get along. I think Jimmy has a restraining order against his dad. So my joke. Has told on live TV was, hey, Jimmy, you look really great, man. In fantastic shape. All those years running from your dad really paid off. Literally, the room went silent.
Really?
Because I didn't set up
you didn't
the restraining
set up.
Order.
Yeah. Oh,
and
I see.
I was like, fuck, I've lost the battle. Because it didn't bomb. It like
it died in the room.
It, silent. There's
it
no,
killed
no,
the room.
No response.
Yeah. Zero. Not even a golf clap.
Yeah, because people would,
And then I flubbed the last joke because it's, you know, live TV. It's pretty nerve wracking.
It is, right?
I've never done it. Have you guys done it?
Yeah, I've done it. I mean, but even when like, and it's whether it be something like that or if you're going on morning TV to promote your shows, you still have to remember. Oh yeah, this is live.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've started on rants, and then I see like the deer in the headlights look from the host, like, oh my god, what is he doing? Like,
right.
And then that makes me nervous. I'm like, wait, you're scared. Should I be scared?
Yeah.
What's happening? And live TV will fuck with you.
I mean, especially for like roast battle, because it's an edgy show, and like we were Comedy Central was great. That you know we'd send our jokes in, you know, about 2 hours before our battles, and they pretty much let us say everything. They were like, well, you can't say cum, Earl, but you can say jizz.
What?
I'm like, huh?
That's a who weird makes note.
That? That's such a weird differentiation.
I would love to
differentiation?
Be
no, differentiation.
I'm not sure. It's too late. But like, it's, I would love to be there for that meeting. Like,
yeah, that's great.
Is it a discussion? Is it someone like...
It's really subjective at that point.
Is cum too offensive? What about jizz? What about splooge? Yeah. Like, it's like going down this... The thesaurus of words.
Yeah,
yeah, like, mango. All right, mango, that's acceptable.
Like, baby batter.
Super glue.
Jeff threw me a line. He was trying to get the room going. He's like, hey, Earl, what do you think of my outfit? And it's live TV. I'm sure. I got two battles I got to do, so I'm really not paying attention. And I'm like, well, Jeff... your hat looks gay, but your outfit says faggot. And as soon as I started formulating, I'm like, this is live TV, but I'm in too deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. They did cut to some nice judge reactions of like, oh,
and they didn't
shit.
Cut it out.
No, they
nope.
didn't.
Oh, yeah, they left it in.
Yeah,
so,
amazing.
You know.
But the thing is people have to remember, like for something like that, that's Jeff Ross putting you on the spot. At live TV, when people are coming with killer jokes, saying, hey, what do you think of my outfit? Be funny. Yeah. Now, you're the thought of what's good for the censors, what's going to paint me in a positive light, that's nowhere in your brain.
No.
All it is I have to be funny.
Yeah.
That's it.
Two seconds notice.
Right. And So I hope people understand that, not just for things like Roast Battle, but when there's a heckler in the audience at a live show, when you're writing a new bit, when you're on a panel show, anything like that, live on the radio, I'm not thinking about how this is going to positively put my career in a good place. I'm just thinking be funny.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I'm thinking. And I'm going to do my best to be successful at that. So the fact that you even got anything out, and
yeah.
Because like I know a lot of people that if Jeff Ross looked at them and said, "Hey, what do you think of my outfit?" They'd be like, "Oh, it's nice. You look good."
Yeah, you got and delivering with confidence is a big piece. I mean, I guess for stand up in general, but especially for the roast battle.
Well, I mean, Jeff always tries to set me up. We have a great chemistry. You know, even the night of the Jesse Joyce battle, he kind of criticized how I was looking. Now I had fucking bright silver pants on and like Nike moon boots on.
How could he criticize that?
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, who wouldn't wear silver pants? and I'm like, Jeff, it just came to my head. You are the only guy in here who can make Eddie Pepitone look uncreepy. It's a real deep reference.
Yeah, but if people get it, belly room, they fucking get it.
Eight people that got it were like, you know.
Why do you think people love the roast battle so much?
Because I think there's no shows like it right now that are so politically incorrect. You know, it's I think bringing edgy comedy back, and you know when you see, you know, people like you last year, like you know, comedy stars, Ralphie May doing it, you know, Rena Zizi having the balls to like.
That was
insane. Props to Steve.
Yeah.
Props for Steve for even going on.
No, like, I mean, I'll be honest, and I told him this. I'm like, you know, it's. Probably wasn't the venue I would have chosen for redemption. But, you know, the problem, you know, when he maybe, you know, had trouble on his first joke, a four-joke battle, there's just no room to recover. No.
Right. But,
yeah.
Especially when you flubbed the first one. But
yeah, it was tough.
But, like,
he just wanted a national stage, right?
Well, he got it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But he's great. I mean, but that goes to show you how hard roasting is. Here's one of the top comics in the country.
Yeah, a great comic.
Yeah, an amazing comic.
It's a different skill. It's just like some comics are good with roast jokes. Some could write Twitter jokes. Some are great on Vine, or they can do funny Instagram videos. Some are like it's all different skills. It's not just funny is like across the board that helps you with every it's different things that you have to develop.
Yeah, I mean, some of the better roasters aren't some of the better comics. I mean, there's a ranking system. I think they rank 100. Roasters right now.
Oh, really?
And I mean, I'm number two after my week last week.
No shit.
But
there you go.
You know, there's also a secret headliner ranking. It's like a skull and bones. Like no one knows how to get on it or who's on it. Like I think Tiana's on it, and rightfully so. She's a killer. Hinchcliffe's on it. Jesse's on it.
I think you should have shirts made up. It said Earl Skakel. I'm number two.
Yeah. Third place.
Yeah, and on the back it says the line. What was the line from your play? We never got to it.
Suck it.
Wait, what?
Oh, no, yeah.
Oh, God.
Sorry, no, that's the Vince McMahon. But can I tell you, the line from my play was, yeah, sure, why not? When I was asked if I want cookies.
And that and
got a huge laugh.
That got a huge laugh?
Probably my last applause break.
How did you do a special way you delivered it?
I just kind of shrugged my shoulders. It was packed the... not amp, whatever, the hall, church hall.
Right.
You know, and I mean, you couldn't move in there, and I'll never forget. I can see it happening right now. And you know,
was the person asking you if you wanted cookies like a big cartoony?
No, it was Jennifer Molina and Yvette Altshuler, my first two crushes.
Hey, shout out to them.
Yeah, and Jennifer was my first girlfriend. I remember kissing her once, and I got a huge boner. Like, it was like freshman year in high school. She's like, Earl, I think we should sit down. Like, that was big, big. I mean, that was when I was like 15. Trust me, I didn't need the pills back then. But the coolest thing from Montreal last week was I'm roasting Tom Ballard, and he's amazing. But I started to get the feeling, wow, I think I'm going to win. Mm-hmm. And I looked to my left, and someone in the front row had a Skakel Army shirt on.
What?
It was a ripoff of the KISS logo.
Right.
The KISS Army.
Yeah.
But it said Skakel Army. And like 16 years of shitty gigs and no success. To look over and see that, I was like, wow, man, this is pretty neat.
That's incredible.
That's awesome, man.
And then I fell asleep an hour later.
No parting for you.
No, you couldn't. It was work for me. Like, you know, I don't know what Jimmy Carr did. I'm sure he hit galas, and he had a lot of shows, too. And I don't know what Tom Ballard did, and, you know, Hinchcliffe and, you know, Olivia and Kay Trevor, they were probably, you know, hanging out. But I was like, I'm not getting embarrassed on TV.
Good move. Because that's mindset you have to have.
You have to.
I mean, that's your first time on TV at that point? Like,
yeah, yeah, I mean,
that kind of
Real Rob.
Yeah, Real Rob Netflix.
There you go.
And,
I wish people could see you raise your eyebrows.
Yeah,
Rob, yeah. You know, he didn't have to put me in that. He's, you know, he put his friends, you know, like Jeff Richards and, you know, many other comics on it. So I'm thankful for that. And, you know, bench warmers, Nick Swartz, and like, threw me a bone.
Well, it's not your last TV appearance.
I hope not.
It's not. Know. Nah, man, people can tell. And also, that's something that's definitely not going to be the only run of that. Like, watching it, it was like, man, it was kind of mind-blowing how awesome the show. My mom was in town. She watched it. She fucking loved it. She's 67 years old. And it's like, it really pops the whole strength of the show. And I just feel like you'll be involved with it more so after that. And also, even you talking about, like, At Midnight, there's so many now. The Roast Battle, what it's done is show that there isn't just one way to do a comedy show, but a stand-up show, something that involves joke telling and writing. And I feel like, you know, you're a creative dude. Like, you know, take advantage of these Comedy Central relationships. And
oh, yeah. I mean, it's just need to, you know. And my spots at the store have been earlier, too.
There you go.
I had a
moving
midnight spot
up
the other night.
Hey.
I was, like, in front of people. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Not 1:30?
This is, no. But I'm, you know, let me say this. I'm happy with 1:30 spots.
Sure.
When you go, at the time, 14 years of nothing, 1:30 spot is like, hey, this is great. You know, I think a lot of people should be more grateful.
1,000%.
Not just there, but the fact, I don't know what it's like at the factory, but, you know, the improv, it's like, you know, people should be lucky they get on potluck tomorrow night at the store. You've got 1,000 fucking comics now trying to get in there and development spots, and just be more appreciative, man.
There it is. Well, I mean, and you're a guy that now that things are starting to get going for you, like no one looks at you like, ah, fucking Earl. We've seen you grinding as hard as you've been working, and we've seen all the effort that you've been putting into, whether it be Roast Battle or your spots or whatever, or just making yourself available. And now to see you like get this, and we're all excited of what it's going to lead to, man. This is really cool that it's happening to one of the nicest guys that
Brad, put your
regularly
dick away.
Uses the N-word,
right?
Ever.
Jesus,
oh, I'm jacking off. I don't say the N-word, by the way.
I know you don't. It's
in public. You should see me when I'm playing Madden alone. Catch the ball, you fucker.
Earl, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Thank you. You guys are the best, man.
No, this was awesome. And
is this where I plug my Twitter account?
No, we'll do all that at the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, did we?
No, we will do that at the beginning, in the intro.
In the beginning of what?
There'll be an intro for the podcast. Unless you want to. Is there anything you want to plug right now, though, that's coming up? This will air tomorrow.
Just my ass.
All right. See Earl Skakel's ass.
You should have edited that part out.
Wait. You're 47. Do you use butt plugs?
No, I use wine corks.
Why do I feel like you're not lying?
No, I don't. I don't delve into the ass.
Too weird, right?
I've had anal sex once. That was enough. It's just that's where shit is manufactured, man.
Dude, that's my whole thing, man.
I don't care how clean you are.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Guess what? It's not clean enough.
Yeah, not for me.
Guess what? You didn't shit that hour? You know?
And, you know, it's like you can get the Continentals. You can get the toilet paper with the grooves in it, like golf clubs. you can stick a water, fire truck water thing up your ass. There's still going to be shit up there. There's nothing you can do that will remove 100% of the shit. I had a girl lick my ass once.
Why did you start the podcast with that?
I know.
For 20 minutes.
For 20 minutes.
Licking my ass.
She did a Comedy Store spot.
We went right into death. We skipped the ass licking.
Right into my mom's, from my mom's size of her pussy. This is a nice bookend.
You're right. You're right. All right.
And she's licking my ass for like 20 minutes, and then she tries to kiss me. I'm like, you got to be kidding. So I kissed her. And,
Get out, everybody.
That's the show. Thanks for tuning in. We had laughs and stories. Now go listen to more.
listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.